This is Living Real Radio, real issues in real time with your host, John Ngadi, Greg Walton, Robert Fiducia, and Julianne Staley. Living Real Radio is sponsored by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized by Closets by Design. Call them today to schedule your appointment at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.
Good morning. Welcome to Living Real Radio. I'm your host, John Ngadi, along with Greg Walton. Julianne and Robert are out today, but today we have fantastic guest, our new pastor here at St. Philip, Father Ed Steiner. Welcome, Father.
Yeah. Oh, it's great to be here. All my priesthood, people said, where would you like to end up? And all the time, only halfway in justice, said, I'd like to end up in Franklin. Lo and behold, boy, my eyes rolled out of my head when the bishop said, would you go to Franklin?
Wow.
Oh, well, that's great.
It's kind of a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. For coming from the cathedral, you know.
So. Right. 11 happy years there.
11? You spent 11 years?
11 years at the cathedral.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Great. Well, this is a whole new world down here in the country.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So, you know, I say whether you call it a small town or a large town or a small city, you know, that's the environment I grew up in. So it feels like coming home in many ways. You know, you walk around the downtown, and, you know, everybody tends to know a little bit of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a good feeling. Not that I miss living in Midtown Nashville, but it's nice to be back in a neighborhood where, you know, you can talk to people and people don't turn their heads out on the sidewalks and the city streets because they're afraid you're going to ask for money if you talk to them.
Right.
You
know? Right.
So anyway, it's a great place to be, not only at the parish, but at the city and everything else. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I was thrilled.
Yeah, things happen in Franklin. Seems like a lot of people are moving down here from Nashville, especially since the big tax hike that they have 34% or something. I don't know what the number was, but it's...
That's right. Yeah, huge property tax hike. And then Nashville is growing so fast. One of the ways that in the last couple of mayors they've been compensating for the rapid growth is that they've been isolating the neighborhoods in a positive way, you know, giving each neighborhood its own identity. The cathedral was in Midtown, not far from us, was 12 South. Then there's the downtown. Then there's the Gulch, you know, all these different areas. And so at least in the neighborhood areas, you know, it was giving you a little sense of an identity, a sense of belonging. But like major cities, you know, New York, the Los Angeles, all of a sudden you become not so much a city, but a city of neighborhoods. And you far more identify with your neighborhood than you do, you know, with the overall city.
I guess.
And so there are people, they miss that, you know, so there, it's not just the economic issues. It's they're looking for a little bit more laid back lifestyle, a little more easygoing, not as much pressure. Not that Nashville is all that dangerous. Not, it's probably better than many, many cities, but, you know, but still everybody's looking for things that are a little safer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons people would be coming to Franklin. I was in Clarksville for 6 years and people were moving up that way for the same reasons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coming from Memphis to Franklin was almost like a reverse, because I come from West Virginia, which is kind of like Chattanooga. So moving to Memphis was a culture shock, and then moving here was like coming back in the thing. But a friend of mine worked where they hold the meetings for the council, city council.
Okay.
And they would talk about, the sheriff would say, what's going on with crime? And the crime was kind of like, well, they stole Aunt B's pie off the porch today. You know, those kind of crime things. So yeah, Franklin's an awesome place to be. And
I think in Nashville, I mean, it's a big city with a small town.
It is
vibe.
It is.
And I would say that Franklin, even though, and probably our Franklin residents are going to hate that I say this, but we're technically a suburb now, but we're a suburb that's still got a small town feel in a way, because we're part of the urban sprawl, you know, and Brentwood comes right up against us, you know, and all that, you know, and it just kind of flows into kind of like, I grew up in Downers Grove, Illinois. We used to be a farm town,
right?
You know, and now it's all houses straight into the city, you know, kind of thing. So
yeah.
So that's a similar thing that we are here in Franklin, but
well, it's kind of like Jesus in Nazareth, right? He was kind of, I was out more out in the country, Galilee, compared to like Jerusalem.
One of my good friends who had been pastor in Gallatin, Father Steve Gideon, he would always say, he'd come to Nashville for a meeting or something. He said, well, I need to leave the suburbs and go back to the city in Gallatin. So he would always sort of give it that reverse feel.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So Father, tell us a little bit what, you know, your upbringing, A little bit of maybe your vocation story. People kind of get to know you.
Well, sure. You know, it's everybody's is a little bit different. Mine is really kind of, it's got its own uniqueness. Grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I attended all the Catholic schools all the way through high school. I made search in high school, which got me thinking a little bit about vocation. And lo and behold, the youth director for the diocese that was doing search at the time became pastor here, Father Ed Arnold. So, you know, I very much appreciate the legacy I have, you know, following Father Arnold. But in search, I began to ask, you know, questions about what I wanted to do with my life. And, you know, I don't have an overly pious story about God did this or God do that. There was just something in the heart that, you know, was pulling me toward somehow I need to be working with people. And one of the ways I said it at one point was, I want to be a person of whom it can be said, he gives hope. He reminds us to be joyful, you know, that kind of thing. So, it's not overly pious. It's not about prayer. It's not like there was this great revelation in church one day. Just that kind of constant tug. And as Lou Holtz would say, you know, occasionally you have to stop and do a gut check. You know, what's my gut telling me? And so anyway, I made the decision. I really wasn't real sure. I was sort of misreading the tea leaves a little bit. On the one hand, I was thinking, well, maybe I want to be a doctor. Maybe that's what I'm being called to do. So, you know, I got accepted into pre-med. And then on the kind of the other extreme, my father had been unbelievably involved in politics, had been a campaign manager for congressmen, governors. And, you know, so I kind of grew up with all these political figures at our breakfast table and dinner tables. So, you know, I thought, well, maybe I need to go to law school, you know, not to be an attorney. I didn't see myself doing that, but rather somehow being involved, you know, end up in Washington as a staffer, you know, doing something like that, working with people through that direction. Well, then the seminary thing, you know, so I thought, well, I'm not going to lose anything by going to college seminary because I still have to take all these courses anyway. So I did. And, you know, in the process, you become more and more convicted that, yeah, I'm on the right path. But then, you know, there's a little bit of question, and, you know, toward the end of college. So I thought, well, I think I'm going to take a year off and work for a while and do that. And then the vocation director said, I told him I was thinking about taking a year off, and he said, oh, well, we were going to ask you to go study in Rome for a year. Oh, when do I leave for Rome? You know, so, yeah. You know, and a lot going on in my life at that time. Nothing bad. My family had left Tennessee and moved to Florida. You know, I had double majored in college, so I was academically very tired. And then also when I got to Rome, all the classes were in Italian. So I was doing this massive having to learn Italian on the fly because they never said lasagna or spaghetti or provolone in, you know, in the classroom. So, you know, somehow you got to learn this stuff. Mm. So at that point, I did take a year off. And quickly put, I was made the counselor at Father Ryan High School in Nashville, spent a year doing counseling with students there, and about a month left in school, all of these students I've been working with, one by one, they started coming up to me and said, well, Mr. Steiner, I don't think I need to see you anymore. I said, well, okay, why is that? Well, this weekend, I got to spend some time with Father Kevin, or I got to spend some time with Father Chris, and I just spilled my guts and told Father Chris, Father Kevin, Father Dan, you know, Father Ron, you know, I just spilled my guts. And as I listened to him speak, well, they did. I could have killed those priests. I've been working with these kids for a whole year. And in one sit down, these priests made breakthroughs and inroads. Of course, part of it is I got them ready to do that. But when I saw the power of what a priest can do in people's lives, you know, then I said, all right, it's time for me to go back. So that's what I did. Finished up at Catholic University. I'm a teacher at heart. I'd always dreamed of teaching. Of course, in this, you know, doing what I do, you know, I was at Father Ryan High School for counting the year as a counselor. I was there 10 years, ended up interim principal and associate principal for a while. Killed me when it was time to ask me to go to a parish. But because of that, loving education, loving learning, I eventually went back and got my doctorate in homiletics.
Wow.
And so now I get to feed that educator part of me, teaching deacons, permanent deacons, how to preach, doing, traveled around to a few dioceses and done retreats for, you know, deacons, you know, kind of based on preaching. And you know, we were talking about one of my two degrees. One was in theater and directing, not necessarily acting. Over time with the preaching, with all that, I started giving a series of actors retreats. And you know, there's a whole theology. I go to Genesis about, you know, God gave us all kinds of things, but God only shared one power with us, and that's the power to create. So, John, you know, in music, that's a divine power to be able to create something. When actors go on a stage, that's a power to create. Well, obviously, married couples create children. Sometimes they're not married, but children get created, you know?
Right.
And so that's the divine power that's been shared with us. And so anyway, you know, I did all of that. And again, being a little bit of a egghead and a nerd, I've enjoyed writing about preaching, primarily kind of my area is history of the scriptures. So I do a lot of writing about the history of scriptures. And again, going back to my theater degree, this is where it affects my preaching, is that I kind of have this attitude, you know, I can stand to be all pious and all doctrinaire, you know, and, you know, use all this theological language. But the real gift is if I can help people hear the word proclaimed and then help them understand what's going on. I mean, you know, like Jesus being lost in the temple. Well, what's that all about? And, you know, those terrible parents, you know, losing Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, again, if you can explain how men and women never traveled in the same group, the men traveled with the men, the women traveled with the women, and, you know, that was not impossible for that to happen, and not at all surprising. And then it's kind of fun to talk about parents. I said, okay, every parent here that's had a child wander off, you know how you felt. Do you think Mary and Joseph felt any differently? You know, they were angry with their son. You know, and then it's then you're able to say, but you know, not all anger is a sin either. Yeah, I mean, so it's if I can make the people in the story, if I can make the setting seems real, I almost don't have to make a point. It could be just made anyway.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's funny. Was part of the MPM conference, you know, mm-hmm. It was online this year. And one of the things I highlighted was some of the seven evaluative tools for preaching, you know, and I thought about it. You can also apply it to songwriting and to hymn writing too, John. I think, you know, one clear, relevant message, attentive illustration, mm-hmm. you know, connection to real life, evidence of hope. And you speak of hope, scripture, table, and smooth transitions and effective delivery. For me, that would be like a great melody, right?
Yeah, you know,
and
absolutely.
And mm-hmm. good poetry. Absolutely. And yeah. All
Greg's
things.
A writer too. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, I just caught on just now.
Yeah.
Well, you told me that. We were talking the other day.
Right. Yeah, I composed for Oregon Catholic Press. And
that's right. That's right.
And John's with World Library Publications.
So. Right. But really, yeah. We just write for God.
Well, that's true. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of thing.
And if it helps pay a few grocery bills, more better.
Well, that'd be good. You know, we're in these difficult times. But so no musicians are really working. But
No. My father was a professional musician for a while until he realized in Chattanooga you couldn't make a living to support a family through music.
Yeah.
But played clarinet in the symphony, did a lot of things. But yeah. But no, I get it.
What do you see from this COVID craziness? I just cloned that. COVID craziness.
COVID craziness.
Yes. You know, it's forcing us to look at life with different eyes. You know, we can't look at anything the same anymore. And I think, you know, everybody did great. Everybody came together. We're all in this together. And a friend of mine said, if one more celebrity says we're all this in all this together, I'm going to ask that celebrity to pay my grocery bill. But, you know, out of work and all that. But it's for a while, as everybody was quarantined, it forced families to be families. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, turn off the television, turn off the Game Boys. Let's have family time. you know? And so families were re-experiencing each other. They had to come up with ways to be in the same house and relate to each other and not get into knockdown, drag out battles, you know? So, you know, okay. So families had to learn to reconnect. Being at the cathedral, you know, more and more families were asking about, what can we do with our kids? Are there any kind of materials for talking about God? Or, I mean, so we scrambled and, you know, found things for parents to do. So that happens. It's interesting with the whole mask thing. You know, this is where we find we're starting to learn a little bit about the virtue of humility, because, you know, I'm not a political kind of person. I don't want to make political statements, but we all know that as wearing masks becomes sort of a political thing, well, that has drug us away from, you know, why are we wearing masks? And so, again, as people are reexamining that, now we're coming through the big rebellion, if you will, and people are looking at wearing masks differently. People were saying, I don't think I need to wear a mask. I probably won't get it, or I won't get that sick. But the operative word was I. Or what oftentimes I call the big eye disease, you know, that was all about I. But now people are they're starting to look at it a little bit differently as COVID starting to take off. And then now it's not about I, it's about you. You know, as a priest, I go to the hospital in Nashville. I don't know about here in Williams County. In Nashville, we absolutely were not allowed to go anoint or be with COVID patients, which was tough. But we were going through the hospitals. I see a lot of people. So when I put a mask on, it's not because I'm afraid of John or Greg. It's because you guys need to be afraid of me. I put my mask on for you. And you know, so as people are starting to catch on to that, well, okay, now we're starting to learn again a little bit about humility and a little bit about doing for other people. So that's a good thing. Now, the other thing that's happened, you know, obviously, everybody was stressed to the max, you know, and then we had this terrible, unfortunate event, you know, where the police officer killed this man, you know, so we have, you know, all of the, you know, the rioting, all the people upset. I think a lot of it was way over the top, emotionally over the top, simply because we were all so stressed about COVID. There was a lot of anger and all of that. Well, again, the rebound, now that we're starting to calm down a little bit, now we've got a conversation going, you know, now. And again, it's forcing us to look at the world in a different way. So I always say this, John, Greg, I always say that in God's hands, every curse is a blessing in disguise. Mm. We just got to figure out what the blessing is in that curse. The opposite is just as true. Every blessing is a curse in disguise. You know, yeah. Ask anybody that's won a major, major Powerball or lottery, their lives, they get miserable after they win because of the pressures on them and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's the one thing we all have to look at. It's like, okay, we're going through this COVID thing, and people say, well, I can't wait till we get back to normal. And I say, I ain't no going back.
Right.
What is the new normal we are going to create? You know, God destroyed the world in a flood. God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm not comparing all this to that. But, you know, if we look through the scriptures, there's all these times that God has destroyed what God created only for something better to come. So, okay, is this kind of the new Noah's flood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, is that what this is?
I just had a reflection. I think it was Richard Rohr, one of his daily meditations. Yeah. And he said that disorder plus order equals reorder, which we call resurrection. Hmm. We're in a time of disorder,
yeah.
And we have to figure out how to order ourselves, and that's going to create something new. And I was thinking, you sent me that picture. Day that I meditated upon that. You sent me a picture of a sidewalk. A kid had written something on the sidewalk. We belong to something new.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jesus came to make all things new. Mm-hmm. Right. And that created a lot of chaos.
Right. And we compare this too. It's the die and rise, dying to self and rising anew. That disorder of the cross, of the crucifixion, you know, there's the reordering, everybody kind of sheltering and wondering what's going to happen next. Right. And then there's resurrection.
And using that analogy with Jesus, you know, what destroyed Jesus ultimately? Fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fear destroyed him. The fear of the, you know, the elite, the fear of the Sadducees and the Pharisees, you know, and that's, again, a message for us. And you just were hitting on it, Greg, we cannot let fear destroy us.
And it's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's in our politics. It's, you know, in people's lives. People are thriving off of it for advantage.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Can't stand that. That's called bullying in many
yeah,
ways.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I had a hammer.
Yes.
Yeah. How about that lead in?
That's right. So Father, you gave us some songs to kind of be a playlist for our introduction of you here on the show. And one of them that you picked was If I Had a Hammer. And I think you mentioned that the last verse was the one that you really felt like was the big punch.
Yeah, that's for me, that was the kicker verse. And as I was growing up, as a kid, I attended Camp Marymount, our Catholic diocesan summer camp. I was there for 25 straight summers, counselor, camp, you know, all that stuff. And we'd always sing after the meals. Well, this got to be one of my favorite songs, along with Dylan's Blowing in the Wind, and something we just sang them all the time. And of course, that was in the height of Vietnam. And so they'd, you know, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. You know, if I had a bell, I'd ring it in the evening. If I had a song, you know, I'd sing it. And as they go through, it's like, okay, yeah, this is all great. Well, then at the end is the hope part. At the end is the real kicker. It's like, it's, you know, if I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning. It's the bell of freedom, you know. And if I had a hammer, you know, I'd hammer. It's the hammer of justice, you know. And if I had a song, it's a song about the love between my brothers and my sisters. And anyway, the song came back to me in the midst of all of, you know, as the racial tension was kicking on and George Floyd's death and all of that. You know, I was trying to put things on my Facebook page to make sense. And the song just came back to me. And I thought, man, what a perfect song, you know, for us to kind of get our heads around in all of this kind of tense situation.
Yeah. And similar tensions, really.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's If I Had a Hammer and Peter, Paul, and Mary.
We'll be right back on Living Real Radio on Hippie Radio 94.5.
Have you seen my Allen wrench?
Mom, where's my baseball glove?
Dad, do you know where my ballet shoes are?
Has anyone seen my phone charger? I can't find it anywhere.
Tired of losing things? Tired of the clutter? Let Closets by Design help you organize your life. Have one of their experts come to your home for a free in-home design consultation. Whether it's a small closet, your office space, or pantry, or even a big garage, Closets by Design can help you make the most from the space you already have. And all units are built in their factory right here in Franklin, Tennessee. Call them today at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700. You'll be amazed at what Closets by Design can do for you and your family. It's the best time of year to organize your entire home. Right now, get 40% off. You heard me right. 40% off their everyday low prices, plus free installation. Call Closets by Design today, 615-261-8700, or visit closetsbydesign.com.
Welcome back to Living Real Radio. I'm Greg Walton with my co-host, John Angotti, and we are here with Father Ed Steiner, our new pastor here at St. Philip, and we have been talking about your path to the priesthood and where your heart is and all of that. And we just finished listening to If I Had a Hammer, which, you know, of course, resonates a lot with the time that we're in right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my mother used to sing that song when she, if I had a hammer, I'd beat you over the head.
Yeah.
Now sit down.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. That was the Italian upbringing.
That's now, an Italian mother right there.
That's yeah. Right. Absolutely. Now, Steiner, is that German?
Swiss, but Germanic, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. And do you bring any of that Germanic or that Swiss stuff with you culturally?
I'm fond of saying, The Steiner name itself is Swiss, but the whole rest of the part of the family is German. On my mother's side, they're all Irish as Irish can be. And I always like to say, well, you know how the Germans are always just super serious about everything and how the Irish love to party about everything. So I like to say I take my parties seriously.
All right. All right. We're going to have a good time here at St. Philip. Y'all come on down. That's right.
That's great.
We were talking about theater earlier and how theater plays in the liturgy. And you told me something that I didn't realize is that liturgy came before theater.
Yes. You know, as people worshiped and they designed worship, the... And by the way, the word liturgy is actually from the Latin, and in the Latin, it means public works. It's a street project. It's laying the sewer lines and all of that. It's a public works. And the word for bishop in Latin means supervisor, overseer. A bishop is the one that oversees the public works. Huh. That's kind of where these words come from, and it gives you a sense of how the church was envisioning and thinking about these things. But, you know, going back to pre-Christianity, you know, early days, as people begin to ponder a notion of God, develop God, you know, they end up with dances, they end up with this and that. And ultimately, what do they begin to do? They begin to tell their stories. For example, you know, if we go back, you know, just here in this country, if we go back to some of, you know, our Native Americans, you know, their dances and their songs, you know, they're kind of like our book of Genesis. They establish their basic beliefs, you know, who is God and why is God, and is God good or is God bad? Is God in between? You know, if God is good, how does sin get into the world? So, you know, you can't figure those things out in prayer. You know, those things you have to explore it somehow. And so it becomes very natural that theater begins to grow out of that. You know, we can look at our Native Americans, but we also can look at the classical Greek plays. You know, they're either morality plays or they establish the way we are. So, yeah, liturgy as worship came first, and theater became sort of a natural outflow of that. Mm-hmm. Now, I like to say that I bring a lot of those theater skills with me to the liturgy, because the liturgy is itself theater. You know, but again, I mean, John, both of you would say this as musicians, everything wants to serve the Lord and move people to worship. So we don't want to say it's theatrical.
Right.
You know, it's much, much deeper. And sometimes the way I talk about it, and especially with liturgy, one of the greatest plays I was ever in was one where there was no set. I won't name it, but there was no set. I mean, so the actors had to create the space by the way we moved, by the way we spoke. For a couple of the scenes, we were in someone's house, so we had to establish where the door was. We had to establish where the windows were. Somebody had to close a window. I mean, so we're doing all this mime stuff. Well, one of the students that was working on a degree in psychology took that and wondered, what are we doing to the human mind when we do that? And so he gave everybody going into the theater kind of this questionnaire, and everybody coming out of the theater a questionnaire. And it was interesting because there were little clues in the dialogue or in the action about the space. Remember, there's nothing on the stage. I mean, there's not even a square block on the stage. At the end of the play, the audience in the 90 percentile saw exactly the same thing, even though there was nothing to see. They described where the doors were, where the windows were, what colors the rooms were, where the pictures were hung. You know, that image got put in their mind and they saw it. And here's a big word, ontological. You know, what is the ontological status of fictional being? Mm-hmm. You know, basically, how do fictional things exist? Well, there we go. You know, it becomes real, tangible. They can talk about it in their mind. They see it. Well, that's what we're doing at Mass. That's what we're doing in the liturgy, except we're not doing fictional being. We're doing Jesus Christ. You know, so it becomes a, kind of with that theater understanding, we're creating an image for people to enter into, for people to see, so they can visualize. And Greg, you said a little bit earlier, you know, as you were talking about of preaching, you know, kind of the steps that go into it. Well, I can come up with a lot of great words. I'm a good writer. I've been writing professionally for 25 years, but nothing sticks in the mind like an image. you know, I can turn a phrase. You know, y'all just quoted Richard Rohr. Well, people might remember that for a while, but eventually they're going to forget it. But what they won't forget is an image. You know, You don't forget images, you know, and it's you know, like one of the other songs you asked me about, you know, with Garth Brooks, you know, Unanswered Prayers. You know, what does the image Garth Brooks create in that song? You know, he creates an image that everybody lives with. You know, we live with regrets. I wish this, I wish that.
And he starts off painting a scene. I was just looking at the words, a night at a hometown football game, my old high school flame. You know, all familiar things that we can grasp onto, too. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. We all have old flames, even me. You know, we all have old flames. We all went to Friday night football games. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, so, yeah, we get it. I read a great book, and I saw the title of it. It's actually a book about advertising. And the title of the book is Make It Stick. Like, how do you create an advertising campaign and make it stick? And the cover looked like duct tape, you know, so how do you make it stick? And what I learned from that book, of course, I wasn't trying to learn how to do advertising, but what we're just talking about is image. You know, people may not remember what I say or what another priest says, but as they walk out, they might remember, like you said, they might remember that story, they might remember that image, and that'll stick with them a long time. You know, it's like a good lyric.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I always laugh. I say, everybody knows all the Christmas hymns till you get to the second verse, you know, but again, it's got, you know, why does it stick? Because it's got an image, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's a little town of Bethlehem or whether it's Silent Night or whether it's, you know, one of our, you know, more popular songs, you know, images remember.
It makes a difference when the priest can say, as we sing with the angels and saints, or as we sing with the angels and saints. What an image.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's, well, we've talked about it.
Right.
One of two things. It's either you're lying or you're telling the truth.
And people know.
And if you're telling the truth, then they themselves have to do something other than, you know, you were talking about it's not theater per se, but it's almost like a living production, alive, that you're entering into this thing that's already ongoing, and you're,
well, it's all part of the gift of who we are as people.
Well, I would say what people always say, I'm in the audience. You're not in the audience. You're a participant.
Yes.
And this is where, as a faith-filled people, this is where we say, okay, now we got to talk about the Holy Spirit. This is where the Holy Spirit enters into us and enters into the whole experience. And it's interesting to say this very quickly. The ancients had a sort of this whole understanding of language and how language worked, and it highly affects the scriptures. This is a whole other show, guys, but they believe that if you told a story, remember, this is an oral society, a storytelling society. They really didn't do a lot of writing stuff, because how do you write something down on clay tablets and carry it with you, you know, 1,000 miles?
You're nomads. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's they tell stories, and the stories, if you heard the story, it was their thought that you became a part of that story just simply by hearing it told. And in fact, in some of the ancient Hebrew, it's really kind of strange. It really does not have a solid past tense or a solid future tense. It's only how you tell it. Do you have a sense of whether it occurred in the past or in the future? But so what it did, it made everything intensely present. And the way it worked, and we see this in the scriptures all the time, and it's, if I hear the story, I become part of the story. And so if John tells me a story about his life, I become part of that story because I've heard it. Well, I can turn around a week later and tell another person the story, but tell it as if, you know, I'm talking about John, I'm talking about his story, but I can talk about it as if I was there when it happened. And you know, in their mind, that was perfectly legitimate, because somehow, big fancy word, ontologically, somehow it has to do with how we exist. We become part of that story. We're there. So when the Holy Spirit enters in, what happens? When we tell Jesus took the cup, bread, blessed it, broke it, Jesus took the cup, blessed it, we're entering into that story. You know, a lot of my non-Catholic friends, well, why do you all re-sacrifice Jesus every week? So we're not redoing anything. We're entering into the event.
Yeah.
The event. And, you know, and that's where the whole thing about theater philosophy, but even more than that, that's where the Holy Spirit is. You know, it transports us. So when you say, the priest says, and so we join the angels and the saints and all the hosts of heaven. Well, they're there.
Yeah.
They're on that altar. One of our favorite writers, talked about, the altar is the place where heaven and earth meet. And, part of my job is to make it believable, that we meet there. Mm.
It's interesting. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall when it was just oral tradition and to hear those stories. Even when I think about the stories of the judges, are highly entertaining stories. Ehud, who's a left-handed swordsman and Eglon the king is in his cool chamber. He's on the toilet. I mean, that's what they're saying, mm-hmm. And so I'm sure they played that up, but once we kind of get it in a book, we apply a formality to it and we kind of lose the magic of it and the mystery of it in some ways.
It sort of shallows out a little bit
once it
goes into writing. And the unfortunate thing is very few people really know how to tell a story now. We've lost the art of storytelling. Now, one of the things, again, all my years at Camp Marymount that I loved, I could listen to a counselor tell a ghost story every single night, And then as I became a counselor, I love telling the ghost stories. And you want to talk about making things real, on the altar, we're telling a story and things in people's hearts and minds. It's not just sort of real with the Holy Spirit. It's really real. We talk about the body of Christ, body, soul, divinity of Jesus Christ present on the altar. But, if you tell, I love telling the ghost stories. This, theater helped a little bit there. So one night I was telling a ghost story and when you're going to lead up to something, you get quieter and quieter and quieter, and then something bad is going to happen. And then you scream and all the kids scream. Well, I was getting quieter and quieter and quieter around this little campfire. And a squirrel fell out of a tree right in the middle of the campers. They thought Tennis Shoe Sam was there to kill all of them. They were running through the room, through the woods, screaming. We were having a hard time getting them all to come back. But for them, it was real. This wasn't pretend. This was real, I agree with you, Greg. We've lost the art of storytelling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I always tell parents, there used to be a great bookstore in Nashville called Davis Kid, and they would have storytellers come, and the kids could all sit around the storyteller. And I would say, parents, take your kids to that. They don't need to see it on a tube mm-hmm. to hear a story. And for kids whose imaginations are what they were, a good storyteller for a kid, they like it better than watching it on video.
Mm. Yeah. Some of the best storytellers are the country songwriters. That's all those country songs. Do you know Garth Brooks?
I have met him on several occasions. When I was a pastor at St. Joseph in Madison, Tennessee, a suburb of Nashville, kind of where Opryland is, and all that. Garth's first wife was Catholic, and she came to the church. And then one of our deacons, who owned his own garbage company, actually was picking up garbage for Garth Brooks. And so back and forth, about to spend some amount of time with him. Now, don't want to say we were, bosom buddies or friends, but I did get to meet the guy. And actually, the first time I met him, this is real quick. I was at Father Ryan, and one of the teachers that I hired, a guy by the name of Charlie Steffel, he taught Spanish. He himself is a songwriter. Well, he has written a couple of Garth's songs. And Garth was not Garth yet. Garth was just some guy named Brooks, out in Oklahoma. Well, Charlie had asked Garth to be the godfather for his son, Leon. And so the Brooks came to Father Ryan High School. We did the baptism in the chapel. And Charlie Steffel kept saying, Father Ed, pay attention to this guy, this Garth Brooks. He's going to be the greatest thing. Just trust me, it's going to be. Here comes this short, fat guy wearing a cowboy hat. And I thought, yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not in talent discovery.
Yeah.
But I told him that story. He laughed and laughed and laughed. But, he tells stories. And I think that's what people love.
Yeah.
He
mm-hmm.
tells stories. And, and people, how everybody loves to sing along with a song. His songs are so easy to sing along with, not only because they're in a decent singing range, but because it's a story, it's not as hard to remember the lyrics. It's a story. All you have to do is remember the story and you got the lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's a story.
Here we go.
Unanswered Prayers. Garth Brooks, you're listening to Living Real on Hippie Radio 94.5, brought to you by Closets by Design.
Hey, Greg, you know what I've been struggling with lately?
What's that?
I cannot keep my closets organized enough. Do you ever have that problem?
You know, I try to imagine my house totally organized. And that's my dream.
And so many people that I know, they have the same problem with organizing their closets. And if you're one of these people, I think we should turn tomorrow to our friends at Closets by Design.
That's right. Yeah, they help you organize your whole house.
Not just closets, but other things. Well, where can we find Closets by Design?
You can find Closets by Design by calling 615-261-8700.
What's that number again?
That is 615-261-8700.
Visit Closets by Design, sponsors of Living Real Radio.
Welcome back to Living Real Radio. I'm John Angotti with Greg Walton. Julianne and Robert are out.
I'm right here, dude.
Right here, I know. And we're here with our new pastor, Father Ed Steiner, talking about his journey of life. We just heard the song from Garth Brooks. And so as we kind of finish up and head down the stretch here, Father, do you have any plans or goals or what do you foresee or in this new venture?
You know, we make the most we can out of what we got where we are. And everybody says, well, I can't wait to get back to normal. And so, well, we're not going backwards. It's going to be something new, you know, will evolve. You know, but from church, you know, this is where church can be what the Lord intended it to be, a comfort and a strength to people. Mm. And, you know, what is COVID taking away from us? It's taking away a sense of community. Because we can't gather like we used to. People can't hug on each other like they used to. You know, so, you know, where do I hope we go? You know, and it's like, I hope that together with the wisdom community that exists here, you know, we can figure out how do we do the very thing that COVID has taken away from us. How do we become and remain a community of faith? Because Jesus said, wherever two or three are gathered, that is where I am. You know, and that, Jesus was saying where the community is where I am. He wasn't saying, you know, anything else. I mean, Jesus believed in community. Jesus could not conceive of prayer outside of a community because they didn't have a notion of private prayer the way we do today. Yeah. You know, so it was always in community. So, you know, where do we go from here? It's like, how can we best be church robbed of the normal ways we establish community? The second thing is, how can we help people not be afraid? How can the church help people to relax? It's going to be okay. You know, God's in charge. I mean, not, and I don't want to say, I'd never say God made this happen because of X, Y, and Z. No, God is the world's ultimate user. God takes what's happening and uses it to the best advantage of the kingdom and our best advantage. So got to open up our eyes and see, you know, and again, wisdom community, well, kind of that. And the other thing is, with all the stuff that's going on nationally, you know, whether it's the justice issues, all that, you know, how can St. Philip and Franklin find its voice to be a voice of justice, a voice of morality, you know, a voice that's a community uniting voice? You know, so it's not just, oh, the Catholics go there and these people go there. Said, oh, that's St. Philip's. You ought to see what they got going on. And I don't mean great liturgies, great this or that. But when they look at St. Philip's, they say, this community knows how to reach out to the poor. This community knows how to give hope. This community, you know, that ultimately a Christian community has to be the light on the hill, minus the bushel basket over it. You know, so, yeah. You know, that's kind of one of the questions, you know, how do we make St. Philip's, all of us together? And I mean, people in this parish come from every square corner of Franklin. They're in all kinds of jobs. They're in all kinds of levels of government. So how do we become an influence for Christ and for good? And when I say for Christ, I mean, a lot of people come at faith from all different kinds of faith, all different kinds of denominations. So we don't have to shove Christ down anybody's throat. We just have to live like Christ taught us. And we change the world. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to announce, oh, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. No, just live the way Jesus taught us and people will pay attention.
Yeah. And they'll ask you, why are you so kind?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everybody will open a door. As soon as they do, step in. But don't kick the door down.
Why does being Catholic matter?
One time, somebody in our program to learn to be Catholics asked me that. So, why should I be Catholic? And my first response was, because we have better parties than anybody.
Ah, there we go.
There you go. Yeah,
that's a good reason.
Let's just make it practical. You know, we don't need to get.
But you see where I come from when I preach and when I'm around that.
Yeah.
But why Catholic? Because the emphasis is on a community of faith gathering in the presence of the Lord. It's about community. It's a, you know, the word Catholic means universal. It's about coming of one mind, you know, not lockstep theology, moral teaching and all that, but no, of one mind about the Lord who loves us, the Lord who died for us, you know, and, you know, different religions, different Christian denominations capture that very well, but ultimately it's about a community of faith, a gathered in prayer around an altar to experience Jesus Christ, and from that, hit the world.
I dig it. What about you?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about that. The reason that I'm here and I'm still here in the Catholic Church is probably because my most profound experiences of community and feeling recognized for who I was and the gifts I bring to the table have been in the context of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. There's one item that we need to talk about before we go, and it's an important part of you, and that's Sam. So Father doesn't come alone. Father comes with a golden retriever.
He does, yes.
Who's lovely, who's Sam. How long have you had Sam?
He's 5 and a half.
Lovely dog, doesn't bark too much, and I think he's already kind of gotten around the parish. Everybody's starting to love on him. Everybody's taking their turn walking him.
They're arguing about who can walk him next. And of course, I did search and rescue for 12 years with bloodhounds, and so I got used to this. And I just always laugh.
Yeah.
I walk into a room. People have always heard about Sam. Oh, Sam, so good to meet you, Sam. All that. Hello, Father. Sam.
Yeah. Right. That's beautiful. That'll bring a whole new life to the. Now, will you bring the dog on Sundays?
It just depends on how it works out and the environment. You know,
it
is a dog, and he's very gentle and very kind, but not everybody's fond of dogs. Some people are allergic to dogs. So,
right.
You know, right now he's coming to the office with me every day. So, you know, he's got to be, dogs are like people. You go to a new environment, they have to be re-socialized. And,
So did Father G get a dog because you left? Is that what happened?
Yes. Father Javon, who was here.
Right.
And then he left and he moved in with me at Cathedral. He kept saying he loves Sam very, very much. And he kept saying, now, Father Ed, when you get to Franklin, what kind of dog are you going to get?
Yeah, we love Father G.
Oh. Keeping Sam. He's a beautiful, big, golden retriever, fluffy, long hair. I mean, just a gorgeous dog.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a lover.
That's a little light spotter. But we really welcome you, and we're glad you're here, and look forward to you leading us in prayer and forward in the adventure from here on out. So a lot of things happening here at St. Philip's, so we are open for business, for better lack of term.
Yeah, we are, and still live streaming. We stream our 8:30 a.m. Mass or 1 p.m. Mass in Spanish on YouTube and Facebook. It's simulcast. It's on our webpage.
Yep.
And we have daily Mass on Facebook. And we're trying to work out a coffee with Father over Zoom. So, we're figuring that out right now and how we're going to schedule that. So stay tuned for that too.
Yeah. So if you're looking for a home, join us down here at St. Philip. We'd be glad to have you. And our last song here for Father is Here I Am, Lord. And why is that song important to you?
It was sung at my ordination. I asked for it to be sung, and it was still a fairly new song in 1982. But it's, it's the young man going to Eli saying, you're calling me, and eventually figure out it's the Lord. But it's all of us are hearing the call of God always, and it's to find that piece of ourselves, can humbly say to God, here I am, Lord. What do you want me to do? That is the hardest thing in the world to say, because we have to surrender my agenda in order to let it be God's agenda. So, you know, for me, it's just a reminder. Here I am, Lord. What's next?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, John Michael Talbot has a nice rendition of that with some beautiful classical acoustic guitar. So, and he's a buddy of mine. So we'll throw that up there.
All right, John Michael Talbot. Written by
Dan Schutte.
Dan Schutte, Here I Am, Lord. So go out in the world, make a difference in somebody's life, smile at them. You're listening to Living Real Radio on Hippie Radio 94.5.
You've been listening to Living Real Radio, Real Issues in Real Time, with your host, John Angotti, Greg Walton, Robert Fiducia, and Julianne Staley. Be sure to tune in every week at 8 a.m. to Living Real Radio. Living Real Radio is sponsored by Closets by Design. Imagine your home totally organized by Closets by Design. Call them today to schedule your appointment at 615-261-8700. That's 615-261-8700.